Hello, everyone. I'm Jake, the founder and president of Discuss Med. Today, I am with Dr. Chow to discuss HIV and AIDS. Would you like to introduce yourself just to begin?
Sure. My name is Brian Chow. I am an infectious disease physician at Tufts Medical Center in Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay. So I guess just to first go to the first question. I think an important distinction is that I think that people often use interchangeably is really what is the difference between HIV and AIDS?
So HIV stands for human immunodeficiency virus. So HIV is a virus that causes the disease AIDS, which is acquired immune deficiency syndrome. People who have advanced HIV infection that's been uncontrolled for many years will often have AIDS. But people can have HIV infection and not have AIDS. Their HIV can be well controlled and their immune systems can be pretty close to normal.
Oh, so like how common is it that someone would, you know, have HIV and it doesn't become AIDS?
These days, I think it's more common that we catch HIV infection earlier in the course. So we have a chance to intervene and give medications to suppress the virus so that people do not develop AIDS. Every once in a while, if someone goes for a long time without seeing a healthcare provider, that they might present to the healthcare provider with AIDS.
Oh, so it's like very, essentially, it's manageable if it's caught early enough?
Absolutely. So HIV is a chronic illness, just like diabetes or high blood pressure or asthma.
Oh, so actually, something that I know when I was doing research, we wrote a blog recently on the website about the importance of advocacy specifically with HIV and AIDS. And something that I saw was, especially for younger Americans, they're disproportionately having undetected, I guess, HIV compared to older Americans. Whereas I think it was about like 13% under 18 have it detected. Whereas once you get over 25, it's over 50%. So is anything like really, is that really, why is that?
So a lot of this has to do with people coming to get tested so that they know that they have HIV. There is a very fast and easy test that you can do. And there's different places where you can get free testing. And a lot of the organizations you work with will post things on their website that tell you how to get tested. I think older adults or people, at least people over 18, where they don't have to have parents' permission, are more likely to go to the doctor on their own. I think that many, however, it's important to know that many states do have laws that protect adolescents, particularly when it comes to sexual health and sexually transmitted infections, which HIV is one of.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, so like when should you get treated? Is it, not treated, tested. Is it after like, if you feel any symptoms or after like certain activities?
So if you're sexually active at all, then it's recommended that you get HIV testing. The CDC actually recommends that everyone in the United States who's age 13 years or older get an HIV test at least once in their life. And more often if you're sexually active, if you have more than one partner, or if you have other risk factors like injection drug use. Pregnant women also should get tested regardless of their sexual history at every pregnancy, because it's important to treat mothers who may be HIV positive to prevent spreading it to their infants either while they're in the womb or during delivery.
So besides just getting tested, and more so, I guess, I know tested is just a way to make sure it's treated early. What are ways, though, people can avoid getting HIV in general?
So if you're sexually active, then use barrier protections. So condoms, either male condoms or female condoms. There are medications you can actually take to prevent HIV transmission. It's called pre-exposure prophylaxis, But most people commonly hear about it as PrEP, P-R-E-P, capital P, lowercase r, capital E, capital P. And that's a pill that you take once a day, every day, to help prevent the transmission of HIV.
Is there like a downside to taking that no matter who you are every day?
So there are, like with any medicine, there are side effects. Most of them are going to be long-term side effects. Some people can have some mild side effects at the very beginning that actually get better with time. I'm thinking about things like upset stomach, diarrhea, which as your body gets used to medicine, those go away. Longer term, you do need to take these medications under the direction or the supervision of a doctor so they can monitor for side effects. Mm-hmm. They'll be testing your blood, not only for HIV, but also for looking at your kidney function and other health, and we'll test for other sexually transmitted infections about every 3 months.
Okay, so that sort of gets to that. So like you can't just take it if you feel like it.
Right.
Supervision. And now going back to like the percentages that we talked about in terms of having detected HIV with undetected HIV. And I sort of like that think that like a big part of advocacy, at least that we promote at Discuss Med, and I know many of the organizations that we champion and advertise people would go participate in, it's all about creating awareness. And creating a knowledge base and patient resources. So do you think like there is a real need for that in terms of fighting HIV AIDS?
Absolutely. So I think the more that people know how to protect themselves and prevent HIV and getting it treated early if they do contract HIV, the healthier people will be throughout their lives. So that comes down to education, changing policies and laws to make HIV testing more accessible, and basically making access to providers who are comfortable treating HIV easier. A lot of people who treat HIV are infectious disease specialists like myself, but there's also primary care physicians who do a little bit of extra training and have a lot of experience in treating people living with HIV. But it's sometimes hard to get connected to those people for that treatment.
It's interesting. So yeah, as advocacy, I know something that I think that we try to just say like the importance of advocacy and then provide organizations that are helpful. So lobbying, are you, is something that I definitely have a lot of familiarity with. And I've heard, we actually just did a panel a few days ago with a legislator talking about advocacy in medicine. And I definitely think like lobbying is sort of, I just want to point out, is something that many people often I think is unrealistic, but I think so won't have an impact. And I just want to like mention, like we just had a panel and it really like they read emails. And I actually think that, it actually has a much bigger impact than a lot of people realize. I think that's sort of interesting.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's really, really easy to email your legislators to let them know how you feel on the topic. And if there are bills that are coming up out of a committee, into committee, or up for a vote, then you should definitely let your legislators know how you feel, because they represent you. And they need to know, in order to do that effectively, they need to know how you think.
And a little bit of a side question. I know we just bring it back to, again, that the percentages of youth versus older people. And I was reading some conflicting research papers in a way about sort of like whether, I guess, this the term we say, like, you know, like there's a stigma around is often, I feel like, almost allocated towards like mental health, I guess, is where it's most commonly used. But do you think there is like a real stigma almost around HIV and AIDS that might prevent people from getting the necessary care?
Absolutely. So HIV, so the highest risk groups in the United States are men who have sex with men or gay and bisexual men. And people who inject drugs. both of those conditions, both of the, are just belonging to those groups is highly, those people deal with a lot of stigma at baseline. It's also, and whenever diseases are transmitted through sex, that's also something that can sometimes be uncomfortable to talk about. And for some people, there are moral judgments that are attached to that that lead to stigmatizing the disease. So the I think the main point there is that that there is a lot of stigma, and I think that open conversations or finding providers who do feel comfortable talking about these issues frankly and openly is important.
How are ways, like from your experience, that, you know, advocates or anyone in general could help, you know, target that stigma and sort of try to get rid of it?
Sure. Even just standing up for when you see these types of injustices in your own life. So a lot of times people will say, will equate something that is dumb or stupid or uncool or popular as being, quote, gay. That perpetuates stigma against the LGBT community. Or if you see that type of rhetoric, those type of statements against certain groups, then you can do your part to be an upstander and address that right away, so that anyone else who is seeing that can understand that they have supporters around them.
Mm-hmm. So I was just working with a mental health director at a local community center. And I definitely, I think just creating a sense of community is so important. And I know that's definitely something that I was like emphasizing when we were creating a resource for Ninth. That was something that was definitely huge. And I think the only way to fight a stigma is to, again, create support and community. Which is also, again, like a big part in which advocacy, which I think, again, is why it's so important, is because it also plays a large role in helping elicit a sense of community.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And sort of like shifting gears a bit again, in terms of the treatments for HIV, so I know you said that most people actually have it under control. Mm-hmm. So like, what are the treatments that are the most common?
So the most common ones are going to be pills that you take. There are several options for one pill once a day regimens. So you take one pill once a day and that's it. And just keep on doing that forever. The downside is that you have to keep on doing that forever and remember to take it every single day. These pills are seen as an improvement over older types of treatments, which were pretty much the same types of medicines, but you would have to take them in multiple pills multiple times a day. So from that standpoint, it is an improvement. I think when one of your questions asked me about the new injectable medications, they're the same medications or types of medications that are available in the pills, but they last long. It's a single injection that lasts as long as a month. So you don't necessarily have to remember to take it every single day. The downside to that is that you still have to come to your doctor's office once a month to get the injection. Whereas if you're stable on pills, you may see your doctor about every 6 months and just refill your medicines at the pharmacy. So in some ways, the injections are good for people who have the difficulty remembering or have maybe varying schedules, like they're switching from night shift to day shift, and so they don't always remember which time of day to take their medication. So for some people like that, or who just had trouble remembering, that might be a better option. But the trade-off is that you always have to be within a month of your doctor's office. Whereas I know some of my other patients would prefer the pills. They can pack pills. They can go on a 2 or 3 week vacation and not have to worry about timing their vacation or their business trip to line up with their doctor's visit.
Oh, that's interesting. So it seems it's very personalized.
Absolutely. And that's the great thing about the HIV treatments in 2022 is that there's several options. They're all very well tolerated and we can really tailor them to a patient's particular conditions.
Oh, so like in a more like looking forward sense, What does sort of like going from these injectables, what does the future of these medications or these treatments really look like?
So right now, I think most of the medications in development are either focused on reducing side effects or making them more convenient so that people can stick with the regimens more often. Could that mean that they have longer acting injectable medications? That may be on the future, but even if it is, it's probably several years away now.
Mm-hmm. So again, being respectful of your time, I guess my last real question that I have for you, and this is going again as like a sort of like a wrap up question, is there a specific like, you know, organization that related to AIDS and HIV advocacy that you have found to be extremely active and something that you highly recommend people like, get involved in?
So I think that almost every city that I've major city that I've lived in has had some sort of AIDS action committee. And they often are the ones that organize their local AIDS walks. Nationwide, I would say that the American Foundation for AIDS Research does a lot of advocacy and fundraising for AIDS research. I think that I think ACT UP is also one of the major national organizations that engages a lot of advocacy. The larger centers that are based in New York and Los Angeles, GAMHC, which used to stand for Gay Men's Health Crisis, but I think they just go by the acronym now. And the one in Los Angeles, I'm forgetting the name of, I think it might be LA AIDS Action, but or something along those lines. But they have extremely far reach and are very well respected and produce lots of great materials for advocacy. And tips for advocacy and education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely like I think that finding the right, I think like as an advocate myself and someone like, you know, joining in being advocacy the first time, mm-hmm. it's a bit overwhelming, like figure out how to best get involved, how to most effectively get involved, yeah. where to get involved. So I think just providing those opportunities is extremely helpful and like directing people. So and then like my last thing is like, is there any last, like, you know, thing, something you like to say, about the importance of advocacy or like a last thing you like to reiterate?
It's a never underestimate the power of your voice, whether it's letting your legislators know by email, by letters or in person, that you have issues that are important to you. And telling your stories is incredibly powerful because these are their constituents and everyone wants to take care of the people they represent. And so hearing the stories from people is incredibly powerful.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Chow, for your time. I hope that anyone listening has learned a lot. I certainly did. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.